Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Chris Usher from Community Living London. So tell me a little bit about Community Living in London.
Well, Community Living London is a registered charity dedicated to supporting people with intellectual disabilities and their families to live fulfilled lives. Community Living London has been in existence for over 60 years now and annually supports over 800 people and their families.
So, can you give me an overview of some of the specific programs?
Okay. Our services are lumped into several different categories. Accommodation services, where we provide residential supports from short-term respite stays to daily visits that encourage more independent living within a home environment. We have community access, which offers a range of opportunities to link people who have an intellectual disability to meaningful leisure, recreation, practical learning, and volunteer opportunities in their community. We have employment services where we assist adults who have any kind of disability develop employment skills to secure and maintain meaningful employment. We provide support for families with children with intellectual disabilities. We help them, where necessary, access community resources. And we also provide support in person-centered planning. So we have person-centered planning facilitators who work with adults to help plan for their future, identify goals, and make links within the community.
So are there any challenges to this work in your experience?
Well, I work in our fundraising and communications department. So I would say that the challenges that we have is ongoing is a funding issue. We struggle with in the province, having 18,000 people on the waiting list looking for support in many different areas, and primarily in the accommodation services area, is one of the biggest challenges because it's so costly to provide 24/7, 24-hour, 7-day-a-week supports. So that's, I would say, funding is a big issue, but we work really hard in our fundraising department here at Community Living London to help alleviate some of those funding issues, but I know that many different organizations in the community living organizations across the province have those issues as well.
So, do you work in partnership with any other organizations?
Yes, we we're part of Community Living London is part of Community Living Ontario. Community Living Ontario is our umbrella organization that we're all affiliated with, and together we work on advocacy issues, and we work on sharing best practices within organizations, and we work with many different organizations within the City of London through our supported employment program. We have over 90 different businesses that have a person supported by Community Living London employed there in a meaningful opportunity. So yes, we are connected with many different organizations.
So in your experience with the organization, Is there any one success case that stands out for you?
Any one success case? Well, there was a gentleman who was living at in CPRI, an institution here in London, and was living in a one room that had a bed, a TV behind a plexiglass, and was experiencing many different behavioral issues, and was brought to Community Living London for developmental behavioral issue support. In that experience of working with us, he was supported three staff to himself, so 3-to-1 staffing. And over the period of time, he has made tremendous leaps and bounds, and was actually last year participated in our United Way stair climb, where we climbed the largest building in London stairs, kind of like the CN Tower climb that they do in Toronto. And he participated in that, and most recently participated in one of our largest fundraisers called Night of Heroes, where we pair up local community heroes with people that Community Living London supports, and together they walk down the runway. And he was able to walk down the runway with a local dentist and his own dentist that he goes to. So the three of them walked down the runway, and it was quite amazing. There was tears in the audience, because many people know of his story and know how advanced he has come from living in an institution with one bed and nothing else in his room other than a TV behind the plexiglass. So that, for me, that's one of the greatest success stories that I've heard in my several years working with Community Living London.
Are there any projects on the horizon for Community Living London?
Any new projects? I think we're trying to always push the envelope and do more with what we have, and we're always addressing, looking where we can address issues that the families bring to us. We're always looking for those kind of opportunities, but there's nothing that I can specifically speak to at this point.
So, if you could send any one message about the work of CL London, what might you say?
Well, I would go back to our vision, and our vision is valued people, inclusive community. And I think that's the message that I want people to hear, is that we value and respect the people that we support. They are valued members of our community. We would love to see them, and we continue to strive through our advocacy efforts, through our communications, and through everything that we do on a daily basis, promote an inclusive community. We recently produced a video called We Are All the Same, and we showed many of the people that we support doing the natural things that everybody else mainly takes for granted in their life. We had people playing the piano, going to their local gym, shopping at their local grocery store, banking at their local bank, saying that they're a mother and they're a father, they're married, they have a boyfriend, they have a girlfriend, they drive a car. And at the very end of the video, we show the whole group of people all together saying, "We are all the same." That's the biggest message I think that we would like people to hear, is that no matter what kind of disability, intellectual disability, any kind of disability, we are all the same.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
It's one of the most critical things that can be done for a person with a disability, providing an opportunity for them, specifically one that acknowledges that they do have capabilities, they do have strengths. It's organizations like Community Living that provide a chance for a person with a disability to really express themselves, their gifts, their capabilities. Say to the world, "I do have something to contribute. Might not be done in necessarily the same way as somebody else, but show me two people who do work in exactly the same way, who do accomplish the same task in exactly the same way." Variety being the spice of life, individuals with disabilities are all about finding new ways, finding innovations. But for them, simply a matter of the practical. If finding what works for them, finding something that can indeed give them a chance to succeed at the things they want to do. If you're someone with a story of disability life, write handylink4@gmail.com. HANDILINK, the number 4, gmail.com. Always love to hear from you folks at home. Truth of the matter is, in disability life, there's no shame in asking for help. There's no shame in saying, my skills are suited to this, so why don't we find what I am capable of based on this skill set? When a person with a disability comes to the realization that they're not facing what might be a struggle alone, it can be a very eye-opening experience. It can really change the course of events for them. The truth of the matter is, once you come to understand that there are people and organizations who will stand beside you, you come to accept that the problems of life might not be as insurmountable as they once seemed. Disability life isn't always about finding an immediate cure. It can be about taking the steps to improve things, doing something that you didn't think was possible, by finding a way just to make things better, whether it be finding meaningful employment or simply easing physical pain, with practices such as disabilities yoga, which can be very effective. It is a matter of building up to being the best that a person with a disability can possibly be. And that's what it's all about, folks. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
The Green Bean Cafe is your independent cafe specializing in fair trade, organic, and premium coffee products. Along with our delicious coffee, we serve other great food and drinks like tea, fresh baked goods, sandwiches, and more. We have two locations to serve you better. Visit us at the lower level of 2320 Wyandotte Street, across from the new engineering building, or the third floor at 300 Willette Avenue's Windsor Star Building. Get hours and more info at www.greenbeancoffee.ca.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handicapable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Chris Usher from Community Living London. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Bonnie Brighton from the Disabled Women's Network. She'll be telling us about an initiative geared at crime prevention for women with disabilities. Gotta warn you folks, this interview contains mature subject matter. Listener discretion is advised. So tell me a little bit about the initiative concerning crime prevention for women with disabilities.
Well, this year for Crime Prevention Week, we were fortunate to get some funding from the Department of Justice. And what we chose to do with it was some messaging around something you and I have spoken about before, Cam, which was a decision that took place at the Supreme Court, the DAI decision. I referred to it before. It was a case involving a young woman with an intellectual disability from Ontario who was being sexually abused by a family member and who was denied the right to testify in court on the basis that she did not know the difference between the truth and a lie. Dawn Canada were fortunate to have the support of the Women's Legal Education Defense Fund, LELEFC, to take the case forward to the Supreme Court as interveners, and I'm pleased to say we won that decision. And through that decision, of course, the rights of women with disabilities, particularly women with intellectual disabilities, brain injuries, and any mental health disabilities, and men, of course, also, are now in a position to use that decision and as their defense or lawyers or supporters could to affirm their right to testify. And, of course, the reason we chose to put an emphasis on this is because far too often what we know is that people with disabilities are denied the right to access to justice. not just at the justice level, but on a very fundamental level in their community. And far too often, they don't report.
So, what sorts of steps can a person with a disability take to be less likely to be a victim of crime?
In terms of the prevention, I think it's really important to understand that that's a very individual thing and depends a great deal on the circumstances of the person. And I would say rather that I would like to focus on the importance for any of your listeners who are people with disabilities to know that it is important to find somebody that you trust to talk about something. If you've had something happen to you that you believe is abuse or a crime, and to talk with a person that you feel safe with. That person does not necessarily mean that's a family member. It could be someone else. And I think it's an important discussion to have around why this decision was focused on him. Because in many cases, it is a caregiver or a person close to the person who may be the perpetrator. As difficult a conversation as that is to have, it's an important one to have, and a public one we need to have to raise awareness around what that vulnerability means for some people with disabilities.
Why is it, in your opinion, that individuals with disabilities may be targeted for such things?
I don't think my opinion that's important. I think what's more important, Cam, is what the evidence points to, which is that people who are more vulnerable are the people that, unfortunately, are the target of people, particularly around the kinds of abuse that we talk about, of course, in the information that we put out along with our public service announcement. And some of the things that I'll just remind everyone are physical force, sexual violence, caregiver neglect, verbal abuse and threat, financial abuse, racism, sexism, homophobia, and classism. These are all forms of abuse. And of course, the one you and I have spoken about before in a previous show, Cam, ableism, and cyberbullying. And of course, yesterday was International Bullying Prevention, I believe, was yesterday around across Canada and around the world. I'm not sure. I don't think I answered your question directly, Cam, but like I said, I don't think it's so much about what I think. I think that in terms of the kinds of abuse that we're talking about, that I've lost the track there. Sorry, bring me back on track, Cam.
What kinds of challenges can there be for a person with a disability in accessing the justice system?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question because I think that's a really important focus for this week in particular. And in terms of what I would point to is that the first barrier is in the reporting, which is some of what we were just talking about. The next thing is that when they actually come to the justice system, again, police services, social services, and many of the victims of crime services, there isn't adequate support for them in terms of the disability supports that they need, and often the trauma and counseling supports that they need, along with, of course, the financial supports. Victims of crime in general encounter all kinds of barriers in their process towards justice, and with people with disabilities, that's, of course, compounded by all of the barriers that you and your listeners are very familiar with in terms of all the barriers we have in accessing physically the places we need to report, in accessing plain language when we need it, in sign language, and all of the things that are not always available to us and, of course, make it impossible for us to bring forward a complaint. I think the other thing to think about in terms of the justice system is that in front of the judiciary, you're not always dealing with people who have sufficient knowledge of people with disabilities. Nor do they have the experience with ensuring that their process is completely accessible. And I think that one of the things we need to recognize now is that there needs to be important reforms and education within the judicial system within police services and social services, and significantly more support across the country for victims of crime.
So, in terms of specific supports, what would you suggest could be put in place for people with disabilities?
Well, there's, I think, a very extensive list of information that's provided through our recommendations to the Department of Justice, but sensitivity training, practical strategies involved in community development approach to how we move forward is extremely important. We need to make sure that there's resources and a community-level strategy for people with disabilities, because I can make recommendations around policy till I'm blue in the face, but if we don't have that buy-in at the community level, you and I both know it's not going to change. It has to be grounded in, you know, an understanding of what disability organizations can bring to, in terms of knowledge, again, of each community, what their community's needs are. It needs to be one that includes the victim in its design. And I think, you know, really what we're talking about, whether it's the judicial system or any other of the infrastructure, whether it's physical or social structures or infrastructure at community, it always comes down to including people with disabilities in how you make those changes and what those reforms are. And I think that's more important than me listing them off. As I said, the information's available on our website and through the campaign. If people go to www.doncanada.net, there's lots of resources there, including the public service announcement we developed, which is a direct message from women with disabilities to people with disabilities. And again, the name of the campaign is We Can Tell and We Will Tell. Information for women with disabilities about identifying and reporting abuse.
So, you were telling me earlier that you had some recent business in Toronto concerning raising awareness in a further step.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little about that?
Well, as I said, I was invited to be on a program that Accessible Media Inc. will be airing in May. It's a focus on the issue of people with disabilities as victims of crime. The segment is called Without a Voice. And in terms of what was really the focus of our discussion, it was to talk about, again, from a very expert woman on the panel who is responsible for victims of crime services in Toronto, Bonnie Levine, who gave a lot of really, I would say, powerful examples of the reality that when she's called to work with people who are victims of crime who also have a disability, she said the majority of people reporting are family members and neighbors and others, bringing me right back, of course, to, you know, what we were discussing earlier, which is that people with disabilities need to feel safe to report. And it's pretty powerful to hear that the majority of those cases that are being reported, and the numbers are far too small and not representative of what we know the rates are, is that's a fundamental change we have to have first, which is that people with disabilities themselves need to feel safe in their community. And again, you know, that's something that each community and each municipality and city and province and all the way up to our federal government, our leaders need to take responsibility for that and for seeing that change take place. People have to make a commitment to people with disabilities.
But isn't it also a matter of individuals with disabilities knowing and acting upon their legal rights?
Yes, and that brings me back, of course, and I thank you for bringing back on track. Of course, it's about education. Educating people with disabilities about their rights and about what constitutes abuse is, again, bringing me back to why we're doing this campaign, is to raise awareness around what that is and around how to feel safe in reporting, because feeling safe in reporting is what's important and will make it possible. Beyond that, as I said, there's people at the municipal level and then all the way up through policymakers, you know, who are looking at this victims of rights Victims of Crime Bill of Rights need to understand that there are very specific systemic changes that need to take place for things to move forward. Fran Odette, who was the other woman on the panel, is a member of our research team and is also someone who has worked for 2 decades directly with people, women and men, who have been victims of abuse. And of course, Fran's expertise in this area is reflected again in the information that's been put forward by Dawn, along with Doris Rajan, our senior project manager.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure can, no problem.
It's tragic that more people with disabilities don't report the crimes themselves. Don't say to themselves, I'm a person with the same legal rights, should be entitled to the same considerations as anyone else in society. Really is something that needs to change, folks. Individuals with disabilities need to not only know what their rights are, but know how to act upon them. Somebody tells you there's no hope in a situation, generally it's the wrong answer, I've found. In so much as a person with a disability has the right to explore all the options before they come to a conclusion, before they say, this is the right approach for me. This is what I think is the best way to handle this situation. A person with a disability needs to make a decision, yes, but an informed decision, especially concerning their legal rights. Some cases may be difficult to try, but when it comes down to a matter of real change, something that will have a lasting impact, it's something that has to be done. A person with a disability has to be able to say to those in the community, I know this situation for what it is, and I'm going to take whatever steps I can to make it better. Crime prevention is always the ideal situation. Ideally, you'd have a caregiver or support person or relatives, friends, family. Have everyone in a person with a disability's life being honest and true to the ideals that we as a society have established in the law. It's not always the case. However, being aware that there are steps a person can take can be an effective remedy. That a person with a disability knows their rights also makes it easier to prevent crime, I think. In so much as they can say to someone who's about to commit a crime, stop. If you do this, I know I can take action, and I will, because it is my right to say what the story is with me, what my situation is. It's my right to ask the justice system to do something better. It's my right to be a respected, protected, included member of the community. We can't just have liberty and justice for some. It can't be a matter of, we'll support group A in their time of need, but group B, not so much. Because if you single out one group and say, we're going to make it difficult for a person with a disability to stand up for their rights, what's to stop them from saying the same about any other group in society? What's to say that singling out a person with a disability, not being there for them in their time of need, the justice system has to stand for everybody. It has to be equal treatment. It's a very slippery slope, I think. You single out one group, goes downhill faster than we as a society care to look. Before you know it, you might find yourself needing justice. But where can any of us turn? Which is why it begins by knowing your rights and acting upon them. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have a good one. You've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.